Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us in this, the latest edition of the OS podcast series. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. And I'm today joined by Ramat Poudinet, who's Senior Research Fellow, and Alexei Patonia, who is a Research Fellow at the OIES. And we're here today to discuss the key messages that came from their recent paper, Global Trade of Hydrogen, What is the Best Way to Transfer Hydrogen Over Long Distances? That was published in August 2022. Ramat and Alexei, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Hello, nice to be here, David.
Thank you very much for having us.
Let me start by asking you, Ramat, you know, why is long-distance transportation of hydrogen needed? You know, I mean, doesn't the decentralization production of hydrogen do away with such a need?
This is a good question, David. Hydrogen is a manufactured fuel. So unlike the natural gas, which needs to be transported from where it is extracted to where it is consumed, green hydrogen can be produced basically close to the consumption site, as long as, of course, sufficient renewable electricity and water is available there. This means hydrogen production and trade is likely to be very different from the production and trade of the fossil fuels counterparts, especially natural gas. Having said that, as the cost of electrolyzer and renewable electricity decline further, it is likely that economic condition for hydrogen production in certain parts of the world will be more favorable than others. For example, the report by IRENA says that in a 1.5 degree scenario, renewables are expected to supply 90% of electricity generation in 2050, with wind and solar alone representing 63% of the total. Countries are not equally endowed with such resources. So the quality of the production cost of resources are likely to vary among countries. Some countries have better wind resources, better solar resources, so the cost of production is eventually lower. In this situation, the competitiveness of transporting hydrogen really depends on the production cost differentials between exporting and importing countries versus the additional cost of the transport that will be added here. The key challenge, however, is the transportation of the hydrogen. At the moment, hydrogen trade is really mainly limited to local or national market. Only very few pilot projects have been launched to see if transportation of the hydrogen over long distances, transoceanic distances, makes sense from an economic and technical perspective. But the thing is that for hydrogen to become a truly globally traded commodity, we need to find an efficient way of transporting it over long distances.
Okay, so Alex, if I can come to you, you know, now. So what are the key challenges of hydrogen transportation? You know, how has hydrogen been transported so far?
That's a great question. Hydrogen is not necessarily the easiest substance to store and transport because of its physical and chemical qualities and features. Hydrogen is a very much, problematic substance to deal with. It's not really dense, so it has to be either compressed or liquefied. That's basically the two forms that hydrogen is being transported in. So it's either compressed or liquefied. And it's not really done. So in order for us to make the transportation process economical, it has to be most probably liquefied so that it could be delivered over long distances so that maximum volume of hydrogen could be transported. And hydrogen is also easily dispersed into the air. So if it's mixed with the air, it becomes explosive. So we need to think carefully about how to treat hydrogen, how to deal with it, because people need to be trained specifically and accordingly so that hydrogen is transported with care and caution.
Okay, Ramat, then, you know, can you perhaps tell our listeners, you know, what are the alternative options for long-distance transportation of hydrogen, therefore?
There are three ways, David, that we can think about long-distance transportation of the hydrogen. One is that to transport pure hydrogen itself, either in a compressed or a liquid form. The other is to transform hydrogen into a derivative before shipment so that hydrogen can be transported in the form of a carrier from which we can extract pure hydrogen at the end. The third way is in the form of a commodity or a material that would not be reconverted back to hydrogen, for example, steel or synthetic fuels. In our paper, we focused on liquid hydrogen, liquid ammonia, toluene, methyl cyclohexane, otherwise called MCH, which is part of the so-called liquid organic hydrogen carriers, and of course, methanol. These hydrogen derivatives have some chemical or physical properties that make them attractive hydrogen carriers. Liquid hydrogen, for example, has significantly higher density compared with that of compressed hydrogen. It also does not have to be converted into another fuel or reconverted back for end use. Liquid ammonia has a density almost 10 times higher than liquid hydrogen. Also, in a liter of ammonia, there is greater mass of hydrogen because its molecule is really more compact compared with the molecule of hydrogen. Then we have toluene, which is a liquid at ambient condition and can be loaded with hydrogen or so-called hydrogenated by the energy supplier and then dehydrogenated by importer or end user. In the case of toluene, when it is hydrogenated, it is transferred into methyl cyclohexane or MCH. And given the fact that liquefaction is not required in this process, the transportation of MCH resulted in a sort of a lower thermodynamic and energy losses. Finally, we have methanol, which is a very well-known chemical and then has the advantage of being liquid under ambient conditions and has a very high hydrogen mass per cubic meter of its volume. I would like to also to mention that the options that we have considered in the paper are not just theoretical. Indeed, pilot shipments of each potential hydrogen carrier we discussed in the paper have been already conducted. However, the thing is that this area really needs further research and investigation, as there are many, many techno-economic factors that need to be considered in this context.
So let me ask this next question to you, Alex. You know, what are the techno-economic features that need to be considered for hydrogen transportation, and how do they compare across the four potential hydrogen carriers that Ramatis just described?
There are quite a lot of them, so I would recommend the listeners to basically have a look at our paper. But to give you a basic idea or general idea of what we've done, we compared such features of those four fuels or four hydrogen carrying options, such as, for instance, volumetric and gravimetric hydrogen content. That basically means how much hydrogen each of those options contains per unit of volume or mass, and density under conditions suitable for transportation, which help to evaluate how heavy the load will be comprised of each specific fuel, and temperature needed for storage. For instance, as mentioned, liquid hydrogen needs really low temperatures, cryogenic temperatures close to the absolute zero, whereas fuels like MCH or methanol are liquid under ambient conditions, which helps basically to store and transport them. We also compared thermodynamic losses or boil of gas losses stemming from the evaporation of that fuel during the time of their storage and also transportation. Because if a fuel or a substance is not really liquid under ambient condition and then you have to freeze it, it basically means that a lot of it will be gone under in the storage process and also the transportation process. So in general, out of all the four fuels, if we just look at the thermoeconomic comparison that we've conducted, we can say that ammonia performed best from those perspectives, and that was closely followed by methanol. And that means that ammonia and methanol can transport almost twice as much hydrogen as, for instance, liquid hydrogen or MCH per se. So those two fuels were the winners, followed by liquid hydrogen and MCH.
Well, Ramat, you know, if ammonia has such favorable techno-economic features, you know, why would other options even need to be looked at?
Well, despite its appealing properties, ammonia is not really a perfect chemical. One of the important issues with ammonia is that it is a toxic and a corrosive chemical, and also it needs to be treated with caution and certainly managed by certified operators. Another issue is that the ammonia is not liquid under room temperature, which basically means that storing and transporting ammonia requires or associated with with thermodynamic losses, in the sense that some of its original volume will not be delivered to the ultimate user. Also, if we want to use it as a hydrogen carrier, we need to crack it eventually so that hydrogen is extracted. And on top of that, we have the issue that in most cases, when we extract the extracted hydrogen needs to be purified. All of these issues implies that the additional steps will be added to the hydrogen value chain, which in turn, of course, results in further costs.
Well, that doesn't really sound very attractive. So, you know, Alex, if I can come to you, you know, what about methanol? You know, what are the advantages and disadvantages of using methanol then?
Well, if we look at the physical characteristics of methanol, it seems to be almost as good as ammonia, if not even better. For instance, its gravimetric hydrogen content is only slightly lower than that of ammonia, which means it could deliver almost twice as much hydrogen as MCH, for instance. In contrast to ammonia, that needs to be hydrogen does not need to be liquefied, and ammonia does. So that means, and that results in lower boil-off gas losses, for instance, almost not really significant. So ammonia seems to be not really that attractive as hydrogen in this respect. But then the problem with with methanol is that it contains carbon. So if we can theoretically produce methanol using biofuels or e-methanol, which will be produced from hydrogen and CO2, for, let's say, captured from the air or from industrial processes, then we will still need to deal with that carbon after the dehydrogenation process at the end point. So carbon still has to be dealt with. And if we're talking about a pure net zero economy, methanol might not necessarily be the best choice. In addition, just like in case of the four mentioned options, most of the currently produced methanol is generated from fossil fuels, and biomethanol and methanol currently cost from 2 to 5 times more as the conventionally produced methanol. So there are quite a lot of challenges to methanol as well, and it is by no means a perfect fuel.
Robert, then, so when it comes to cost, how do the different options you've investigated in the paper actually compare?
Well, in the paper, David, the components we consider are production, conversion, storage, shipping, and reconversion. Obviously, not all the stages are applicable to each potential hydrogen carrier. For example, liquid hydrogen does not require reconversion, whereas MCH and methanol does not require liquefaction. In terms of the cost share, for all of the studied options, production phases does not seem to be the main components along the value chain. For example, for hydrogen, the share of the production cost compared to the cost associated with the remaining stage of the life cycle is among the lowest. In other words, the most the costliest or most capital intensive part of the life cycle are shipping, liquefaction and specifically storage. In terms of total cost, the total cost of transportation for liquid hydrogen, inclusive of all elements across the value chain, is several times higher than that of other options we studied in the paper. This is despite the fact that liquid hydrogen does not incur capital losses related to reconversion. MCH or methyl cyclohexane ranked third in terms of total cost across value chain per kilogram of hydrogen, but it has one of the highest shipping costs because of its weight. Also, because of its low hydrogen density, eventually less hydrogen can be transported with MCH for a given capacity of a ship. This is even without considering the cost associated with transporting toluene that we regain after dehydrogenation back to the producer of the MCH. This leaves ammonia and methanol as potentially better hydrogen delivery option in terms of the final quantity of hydrogen transported to the end user, as well as approximate minimum cost of transportation. But we have to note that methanol has other consideration too. The ultimate decarbonization of the methanol value chain requires CCUS at the dehydrogenation phase. So these costs will have to be added somehow to the total cost that related to the using methanol as a hydrogen carrier.
Okay, now Alex, just to finish up, you know, in your paper, you also discuss issues beyond techno-economic features. You know, what are these factors and how do they affect the choice of the optimal hydrogen carrier?
Indeed, although we focus on the techno-economic side of the analysis, there are other factors that need to be considered by potential decision makers, energy companies, energy practitioners, and basically all people interested in decarbonizing most of the industries for these purposes. Actually, hydrogen being considered as one of the most promising options. For instance, we mentioned already developed industries, sectors, and infrastructure in place as one of the decisive factors. For instance, if a country has a well-developed methanol industry and not ammonia sector, then it would make a lot more sense to build that hydrogen delivery case around that methanol sector rather than creating something from scratch. If we take the example of Chile, for instance, a country with a well-developed mining industry, it may make a lot more sense to rely on producing ammonia, which is widely used as a feedstock for explosives. And Chile is a well-known country for mining because, mining sector is one of the key contributors to their budget. And that's where explosives are being used. And that's where ammonia could be used as well. Another factor to consider will be creating or adjusting the existing legal or regulatory framework. So I think that this is also something very much important to consider. And finally, the last but not least is basically the whole array of technologies related to decarbonization that might potentially, you know, lift the need of transporting hydrogen over long distances. So if we are talking, for instance, about carbon capture, utilization, and storage, if those technologies become widely spread, cheap, and, more or less accessible everywhere, there might not necessarily be a really high demand in transporting hydrogen over long distances, producing it somewhere from far, far away, and then deliver it to the end point because you can basically produce something and just cut the emissions on the spot without the entire complexity of the transportation process.
And there certainly, therefore, are challenges which are going to be faced in the future. But, the impetus is there to be able to kind of resolve and get those sorted out. Well, look, Ramat and Alexei, thank you so much for your time today. I've really enjoyed our conversation. It builds on the messages from your paper, Global Trade of Hydrogen, What is the Best Way to Transfer Hydrogen Over Long Distances? That, as I said earlier, was published in August 2022. And it should be noted, as Alexis mentioned earlier on, this paper contains considerably more detail on what we've been able to discuss in today's podcast. So I urge you to have a look at that. So I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity, or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.